This is part B of 14 things to happen in prophecy before the end comes. And we're ready to start number 5. Number 5. The rise of the kings of the north and east. Now we find this in Daniel 11, and let's pick it up here in verse 44, because the king of the north is going to end up being the beast power. He will come down into the area, take care of the king of the south, and then go into the Holy Land, go into the temple and say that he is God. Once he gets there, verse 44, but tidings out of the east and out of the north will alarm him, and he will go out with great fury to destroy and to utterly annihilate many. Kings of the north, what do we have with that? Russia, Tibet, Mongolia, Korea, kings of the east, Japan, China, all of Southeast Asia, India. Now we find they're going to develop into the greatest army that the world has ever seen. And I just recently read a report that the Chinese have 70 million surplus men without women to marry. So you've got to keep them active in something. So they've got a ready-made army growing up because the Chinese feel that boys are worth more than girls, and girls then, because of the abortion law, you cannot have any more than one child. And so they still look to the boys to take care of the parents when they get old, so they keep the boys. So now they have 70 million surplus men. So what are you going to do with them? Ready-made army. All right, when we talk about the kings of the east, let's look at the final battle that's going to happen here. Revelation 9. That's also going to include Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all of the stans, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran will be involved in it, Iraq will be involved in it. I mean, it's going to be humongous. And here it talks about the way of the kings of the east. Let's pick it up here, verse 13, Revelation 9, page 1234. And the sixth angel sounded his trumpet, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar that is before God. And it said to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, loose the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates. Then the four angels who had been prepared for an hour, a day, a month, and a year were loosed, so that they might kill a third part of men. Now one of these times I'm going to have to go through Revelation and figure out where it talks about they kill a fourth of men. Here they kill a third of men. How many people are going to be left when the kingdom starts? Who knows? But it appears that it's probably going to be about 10%. So if there are 10 billion people on earth, that means there will be 1 billion left. All right, let's go on. Verse 16, and the number of the armies of the horsemen was 200,000. So this is an army that will be strong from the river Euphrates all the way back to the far east, because you can't get that many people all in one place all at once in an army. And so this is going to come in waves. And so knowing the beast power, knowing what a threat this is, and when he comes into the Holy Land to establish himself as the Messiah of the world, then they're going to start arming. So he's going to make a preemptive strike, as we find in the first part of chapter 9, where he has this secret weapon which will immobilize them for 5 months. And then they start coming. Once they start coming, you're not going to stop them. And this is what overwhelmed the GIs in Korea. When the Chinese got into the war, They just had wave after wave after wave after wave. There was no end to them. And so, rising of the kings of the north. Look at economically. Russia. Now, we're not talking about the current recession. But Russia has built up great economics. China, Japan, Southeast Asia, and India. They're all becoming powerhouses economically. And you need that to have an army. You need that so you can have enough money to support an army, keep the whole country going, etc. So this is going to be a tremendous thing. So the rise of the kings of the north and the east, where would we put this on a scale of 1 to 10? Between 4 and 5? That might be fair to say. Kind of a balancing act right now at 5. Comment was made with an army that big, considering all the technology that we have today, that looks like we're going back to more of a conventional army. You still have to win wars with infantry. But when the heavens shake and the earth shakes, what's going to happen to global positioning of which modern technological armies are dependent upon? So let's put that at about 5, the development of those countries. About halfway there. All right, now let's look at number 6, the fall of Israel. Now the fall of Israel is not talking about the Jews, it's talking about the descendants of the 10 tribes of Israel. Let's come back to Deuteronomy 28. We've been here many times before. But let's go back and let's see that it is unfolding right in front of our very eyes as we see the daily news transpire. Deuteronomy 28. We've been here many times before. And the reason that we've been here many times before is because it is so applicable as to what is happening now. Now let's pick it up here in verse 43. The stranger dwelling among you shall get up high, shall get up above you very high. Now that's happening more and more and more. They just announced that San Jose is now the most diverse city in California, with Indians and Pakistanis and South Vietnamese and Chinese, to say nothing of the Latinos. Most diverse. Many places you can go and not hear English anymore, and sometimes even in the post office. It's happening. And then you think about the recent election, and that has many manifestations of it too. Get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. So we are getting into this position right now. Right now. Now we have a president coming in. Now some will be mad at me, and some will like me for saying it, but nevertheless, I'll say it. He has promised that he's going to cut back on the military. He has promised that he's going to negotiate and not confront, but I really believe they're going to confront him terribly. He wants to work on the domestic things to play out all the narcissism of the Americans today and spend all the money on themselves, supposedly for building roads and bridges and things like this. So we'll have to see what happens. But remember, the $1 trillion that he's going to use in deficit spending is going to come from our enemies if they will buy the security notes. So we are being brought down very low. It is a process. The Russians are speculating that America will disintegrate into 6 countries. So who knows what will happen with this economic downturn, because it's going to be the worst that we have ever seen or lived through in our lifetimes. Russia's already challenging us with Venezuela, and Cuba. In the backyard, a Texan in our audience said the first country will be the Republic of Texas. He ought to know. He lives down there. We'll have to see about that. But the country is already divided, isn't it? Yes, indeed. And remember, Mazatlan. You know what Mazatlan is? That's a movement by the Mexicans and Latinos to retake Southern California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Southern Texas by coming in and populating and expanding the population, using our money, using our welfare, taking from us so they build themselves up, and then in a national emergency, if there's some kind of rebellion or something to take place, then there will be a UN-mandated plebiscite. And then they will vote and divide the country up. Will that happen? Don't know. But what is the process? Get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. Now, when it says you shall come down very low, if you want to understand what that really means, go back and read the book of Judges and see how when Israel left God, those nations around them conquered them and made them slaves. Now, with our economic situation and as much as we owe the rest of the world, what's it going to come to? Remember this. Do not minimize any of the prophecies. Like some people like to say, and we'll talk about it with the temple here in a bit, they say, well, a tabernacle would be just fine, or a dedicated holy place. You think the Jews would settle for that? Never happened. Never happened. Or maybe it won't be as bad as the Bible says. Or another man says, well, the way you need to look at prophecy is just look to those countries around the Mediterranean, because that's where prophecy is always centered. Well, when you read the book of Revelation, it's the whole world. When you read the book of Isaiah, it's the whole world. So no, look at maximizing, not minimizing. Because it's going to be known to everyone, see. Verse 44, he shall loan to you, and you shall not loan to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Now, that's a complete reversal, isn't it? Yes, indeed. And all these curses shall come upon you, and shall pursue you, and overtake you until you are destroyed, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes, which I commanded you. And they shall be on you for a sign and a wonder, and on your seed forever, because you did not serve the Lord your God with joyfulness, nor with gladness of heart, for the abundance of all things. Have we had the abundance of all things? As no other generation. And the day of reckoning is coming. So where are we with the fall of Israel? I would say 5.5. 5.5, maybe 6. All right, number 7, the false prophet. Well, they're doing a lot to develop a world religion. As a matter of fact, Tony Blair, who was an Episcopalian during the time that he was Prime Minister of England, converted to Catholicism and was baptized by the Pope, and is now ahead of a foundation to bring all religions together. That's in addition to all of the other, let's bring all religions together. And all religions are, let's have the golden rule and love each other and be good to each other, and we don't need any other rules. Well, if that were the case, then we would have a one-page Bible. And how many times have I warned and preached against this? Okay. It's going to be under the aegis of the false prophet, who is mentioned 3 times in the book of Revelation. Revelation 13, Revelation 16, and Revelation 19. Now, here's something to think about if it's going to be the Pope, which it probably will be. Because, you see, all the religions of the world are Babylonian. And the Pope's office, from the time immemorial, going clear back to Balaam, who was the prophet from Pethor, and all you have to do is just realize that's just a different way of pronouncing Peter. And, of course, did you know that the Pope sends out greetings to the Hindus when they have their holy days? Well, you've got also the Dalai Lama. And I've often wondered where it talks about the... Let's come back here to Revelation 13. Let's look at this just for a minute. Revelation 13. See, man wants to believe that he can solve his own problems, and the way to overcome evil is not to admit that there is any evil and don't have laws against any evil, then there won't be any evil. That's how they do it. Well, let's pick it up here in verse 11. And I saw another beast, because the first one here, the beast power, and a lot of, when I had the radio program, someone asked, well, I think Gianni asked, do you think that Obama is the Antichrist? I said, no, couldn't be. Yet even some of the Church of God are preaching that Obama's the Antichrist. I said, well, when you read this description, he's going to say he's God. Obama hasn't done that. He's going to go stand in the temple in Jerusalem and say everyone is to worship him. He hasn't done that yet. And he's going to have rule over all nations and kindreds and languages and tongues, and he's only been voted to be president of the United States. So he is not the Antichrist. Let's read about the false prophet here. I saw another beast rising out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, but spoke like a dragon. And I've often wondered, two horns. A horn in prophecy equals a king or leader, correct? All right. Does that mean the Pope and the Dalai Lama? And what would that do for the religions of the world? Bring them together as one. And there are only two people who are called by the world your holiness. That is the Pope, and that is the Dalai Lama. So, I don't have my cowbell here, but just consider I rang it. The Dalai Lama, in many places in the world, and even here in the United States, is probably more followed and loved than the Pope. And besides, he brings in a spirituality of compassion, of love, of consideration. See, speaks like a dragon because that's what Satan always says. Let's have love and consideration. You don't need rules. You don't need regulations. So what you're going to see is this. All religions start coming closer and closer together by de-emphasizing doctrine and emphasizing love, compassionship, and relationships. And everyone's going to say, oh, that's great. Just stop and think today. If you just had a group of people from out of the world and you get up there and you read the Ten Commandments, hardly anybody's going to agree with you on it. They don't want them. So this is how it's going to come. Now, what about the last pope? They're already talking about a successor for Pope Benedictine XVI, who was Herr Ratzinger, head of the Office of Inquisition. Oop, doctrine. They changed the name, but not the tactics. And they're wondering, will it be a black pope? They're already starting to push an American cardinal, first black cardinal in America, to be considered for replacing Benedict XVI. Well, let's ask another question. Why should we believe the prophecies of the Catholics which say that there's only one more pope coming after this one dies? What happens if there another one comes and he dies and their prophecy has failed? What happens when men's prophecies fail and they're supposed to be believed by everyone? Oh, well, we have a new revelation. That's what the fellow said who was one of the two witnesses. Oh, the tribulation was supposed to begin 6 months ago. Never happened. Now he's got a new revelation concerning it, and people are still following like lemmings. So what'll happen then if that prophecy fails? All right, number 8. There must be a temple of God built in Jerusalem at the right place. Scale of number 7, false prophet and combining all the religions. Oh, probably 4.5. Getting closer. Okay. There has to be a temple built in Jerusalem. Now let's come here to Revelation 11, just the next page over. This also ties in with the two witnesses, which is number 9. Temple of God must be built. Now let's understand, when did John write Book of Revelation? About 95 AD. 25 years after the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. So here we have this vision given to him, and it talks about the temple of God. Verse 1, then the angel gave me a measuring rod like a staff, saying, arise and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship in it. But leave out the court that is within the temple area and do not measure it, because it has been given up to the Gentiles, and they shall trample upon the holy city for 42 months. All right. Why measure the temple if it isn't there? Why do you have it say there in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, that the man of sin, the son of perdition, goes into the temple of God, which was standing when Paul wrote that in 53 A.D., and yet John writes this here, that after the temple has been destroyed, he's again to measure it. So how do we know a temple has to be built? It won't be a holy place, just out there dedicated, and you get some sprinkling water and a little bit of dust from a red heifer or the ashes, and you sprinkle it out there, and you have a rabbi or a Kohan, who is a descendant of Aaron, designate this a holy place. Now, if you'll read in the appendices of the New Testament, I have, where will the temple be built in Jerusalem? That will be south of where the Wailing Wall is. And there is a spring there called the Spring of Gihon, which is now running clear water. It used to run very dirty, mucky water. Now, when the temple is going to be built, I believe, so I'll ring my cowbell in absentia again here, that the Spring of Gihon is going to flow with lots of water, which will be assigned to the Jews. The place to build the temple is directly above that, which will be south and away from the Mosque of Omar. Now, with religious ecumenism, the Muslims could live with that because the Mosque of Omar is not going to be touched or destroyed. Which if they tried to destroy the Mosque of Omar, you would immediately have all the Muslims in the world in mass come to the area of Jerusalem and destroy every Jew they could get their hands on. There'd be no way to stop it. It wouldn't happen. And the Jews, thinking that that's where they're going to build the temple, are dreaming, because that's not the place where the temple was. But it has to be built, because notice, here in Matthew 24, we've covered this before, but let's go back and review it again. Okay. Matthew 24. Because this becomes very important to understand. Verse 15. Now remember, when Jesus spoke these words right here, verse 15 and on, they were on the Mount of Olives looking across the Kidron Valley right at the temple. So when he says this, verse 15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation which was spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, that has got to be the fulfillment of 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. The man of sin, the son of perdition, saying he is God. Then we have this, a parenthetical statement which had to be inserted there by John, who canonized the Old Testament along with Philip and Andrews. The one who reads, let him understand. Now, when Jesus was speaking this, he did not utter those words because they weren't reading anything. He was speaking to them. So John had to put this in here for what reason? To let us know that he knew the first temple was destroyed, and he was measuring actually it was the second temple, and he was measuring the third temple in vision, knowing that a temple would be built. But he didn't know when, because they also understood that in 70 AD, there was no man of sin that went into the temple as the abomination of desolation. Never happened. As a matter of fact, Titus didn't even get to see the city of Jerusalem until it fell. And then he was astonished at all the things that had taken place. I've got that also in the appendices of one of the New Testaments there. So a temple has to be built. Well, figuring this will have a sudden fulfillment. But on a scale of 1 to 10, let's put it at about 4. Because they have many of the garments for the priest and the Levites and the implements for sacrifices, the lots for the goat of Azazel and so forth. They have all of those ready. So let's put that at 5. All right. Number 9. The two witnesses. When the two witnesses come on the scene, that will probably take place. Now you need to get the message, the two witnesses and Elijah. They'll all be Jews. They won't come from the church. Anyone who thinks the two witnesses will come from the church doesn't understand Zechariah 3 and Zechariah 4. The two witnesses will probably begin just a few months before the king of the north comes against the king of the south, and then goes up into the temple and says that he is God. Now God will intervene and deal with the Jews and the Levites at that time. So you get the message on who are the two witnesses and the coming Elijah. So that one, you can't put that on a scale of 1 to 10, because that's going to happen like that. When it happens, it's going to be the temple built, it'll be in operation, and when that's built, you can put the scale of where the two witnesses will come up, probably at about 8 or 9, and then all of a sudden they'll be there. Number 10, Laodiceans. When I first gave this sermon back in 1969, we all thought we were all Philadelphians, and the Laodiceans weren't even on the scene. But now the question is reversed. Nearly all the Church of God are Laodiceans, and where are the Philadelphians? The ones who patiently keep the Word of God and love God and are zealous for God. Laodiceans are everywhere. So on a scale of 10, it is 10, without a doubt. All right, number 11 is the Philadelphians. They're here someplace, but they're hard to detect because there are so many who are involved in the politics of Church of God religion rather than in serving God with a pure heart and mind. All right, number 12, hating Christians. We covered part of that, but that is developing more and more and more and more. Jesus said right here in Matthew 24, he says, verse 9, then shall they deliver you up to affliction and shall kill you, and you shall be hated by all nations. Well, back at the time that Jesus gave this and what happened to Jerusalem and the fall of it afterwards, all nations didn't hate the Christians. It was only around the Mediterranean area and probably up in Europe and over to Babylon where the Jews were, and that's about the area where the Christians were. But now today, it spread clear around the world, and the hatred for any form of Christianity is growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. Just look at all of the movies attacking any form of Christianity, and especially Catholicism, which you could say really deserves it for all that they have done. And so, what could we say on a scale of 10? We'd have to say, we're about 6, do you think? 6, pushing close to 7? All right, number 13, proclaiming the gospel to all the world. Now, where are we on that? Now, there are many semi-gospels that the Protestants preach. There are, with the churches of God, a lot of the true gospel that is preached. But how effectively are we reaching all the world? Well, through the websites, we're reaching many, many more people than we could through radio and television years ago. There are more and more Bibles being printed, which contains the gospel. And that's going to the whole world more and more, as we've mentioned many times about the 800,000 a year Bibles being printed in eastern China under the direction of the United Bible Societies out of England. So it's building. How's the gospel being preached in all the world for a witness to all nations? Then shall the end come. And remember this. A witness is to that last generation. So how long does that last? What is a witness? There are many ways you could bring that out. A witness, one witness is this. If you have a Bible in your house, it's a witness to you, even though you never read it. But when God says there's going to be a witness, I think it's going to be very powerful. And then, just when it looks like that witness is going to be snuffed out, the two witnesses are going to come on the scene, and they're going to bring a witness of it, right? And nobody can stop them until they finish their 3.5 years. All right. Comment was made when the two witnesses come on the scene, it's going to make people hate Christians even more and more and more. Now, what would that be on a scale of 1 to 10? Well, today, probably, in America, scale of about 3 or 4. Other places in the world, all the way up to 10 in Muslim countries. So it depends where you are. So being hated by all nations depends where you are. They'll kill you in Muslim countries. You can't even take a Bible into Saudi Arabia. Though there's some ecumenical movement there in Saudi Arabia, so we'll have to see what happens. But true Christians will be hated. We're even hated by those who profess to be Christians because we keep the commandments of God. So, you know, there are many different forms and variations of it. All right, number 14, No truth, no faith. Luke 18. We'll break right in the middle of that, verse 8, Luke 18 and verse 8, page 1043. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, shall he find the true faith on the earth? People really believe. No, people would rather have their lies. I mean, right here in little old Hollister, just to give you an example. On Saturday evening, after services, we went down to a restaurant to eat. And lo and behold, there was a traffic jam in Hollister at 6 o'clock at night. And we couldn't figure out, how could this be? We were driving down, you know, just expecting to drive down to the restaurant and have a place to park and so forth. No place to park. More cars coming. Cars everywhere. So after we finally found a place to park, we were lucky enough to find a place to park, got out, and I asked someone, I said, what's going on? Oh, it's the parade of lights for Christmas. And I thought, can you just imagine someone standing up and saying, all of you in Hollister are a bunch of sinners coming down here for the parade of lights for Christmas. You believe in a lie. It's not Christian. Oh, they would hate you, tear you apart, run you out of town. But you see, the majority of those in Hollister have no truth and have no faith. Now, what's it like in the big cities? All right. Even in the church, okay, do they really believe? Or, for Laodiceans, is church a convenience? Or are you really dedicated to the utmost of your life? See? So that's what Jesus was talking about here. Okay? So where are we on no truth and no faith? Probably about 7 to 9. In the church, probably 3 to 5, depending on the individuals. So those are the 14 things we need to watch for. Prophecy will be fulfilled. Jesus said all his words will take place. Heaven and earth will pass, but not his words. So it's a matter that we have to understand his words and understand what he is saying. So there's got to be a king of the north, number one, king of the south, number two, world trade, which is well developed now, number three, mark of the beast, which is well developed, coming along, number five, rise of the kings of the north and the east, number six, the fall of Israel, number seven, false prophet, number eight, the temple of God must be built. Number nine, the two witnesses. Number 10, Laodiceans. Number 11, the Philadelphians. Number 12, hating Christians. Number 13, proclaiming the gospel to the world. Number 14, no truth, no faith. So that's quite a thing. So this will give us some guideposts to look at and to watch. Watch the news. Let's come back here to Matthew 24. And let's see what Jesus tells us to do. Now let's come here to verse 34. Truly I say to you, this generation shall in no wise pass away until all these things have taken place. The heaven and the earth shall pass away, but my word shall never pass away. But concerning the day and the hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Now as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be at the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they were not aware until the flood came and took them all away, so shall it be at the coming of the Son of Man. So it's going to be something when that happens. Down here in verse 42, Watch therefore, because you do not know in what hour your Lord is coming. Now that can be two ways. The literal return, or God's final judgment on any one of us, because God can come upon us at any time. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what hour the thief would come, he would have been watching and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at a time that you think not. That's why we have these 14 things to look at. And how many false alarms have we already had of people who thought that his coming was imminent? Out of time. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.